Great to have you company wherever you're listening. 1-300-736-736 if you'd like to join me. Quite a few coming through in response to Sam Newman. We took a few calls before the news. You can jump on the line now. We can take a few more. 1-300-736-736. And I'll read out a few of your speckled texts as well. 0433981116. The speckled text, speckled cash loans up to $2,000 paid fast. And that open line is for Werribee Kia, who are open for business right now at Werribee Kia. Sales, service and parts still fully operational. And they'll look after you down there, Jim and Janan and Aid and the team, if you need your car serviced or whatever you need. Drop down to Werribee Kia and they'll help you out with social distancing. Plenty of people in the market still for a new car. Not sure if you've been watching any of those shows like House Rules and been inspired to do anything around the house or garden as a result. So we're going to have a chat about that a little bit later on as well. A few texts I'll read out, 0433981116. Keen to hear what you're up to in that space, and keen to hear from Chris Anstey. The first two episodes of The Last Dance, the 10-part documentary series on the sixth championship of the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls dynasty. It premieres, I should say, on Netflix at 6 p.m. on Monday here in Australia. I was hoping it was going to be 6 a.m. at Monday, but it's 6 p.m. on Monday here in Australia on Netflix. So we'll talk to Chris Anstey about The Last Dance very shortly as well. But quite a few coming through about Sam Newman. So just let me read you a few of those. I totally agree with what Sam said. Chris, thanks for that, Sam. Let me have a look here. Got a few coming through about the great kicks as well that I want to read out at some time, because that was an interesting topic to throw up. Sammy is a legend. That's another one from Brett. Another one, Sam, is a legend. Might as well close the 10, track 2. 400 people exercising, way worse than two blokes on a golf course hole. Cheers, meat tray. Take more of your calls shortly. But Chris Anstey has been good enough to join me. Welcome to you, Chris. Great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Plano. Yeah, interesting times. And you've got me at home in the middle of kindergarten teaching.
So what's your forte when it comes to teaching your kids, Chris? Which one do you step into and which lesson do you make sure you step out of?
We're working on letters and sounds at the moment, all the important stuff. So no, he's outside having a kick of the soccer ball actually at the moment. Not sure how we got onto that, but good on him.
How dare you have other balls out there? Are you still doing any online coaching, Chris? Because I know you were coaching fairly heavily when we last spoke a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I'm doing quite a bit. I've still got a role at Caulfield Grammar and do a little bit of corporate work with a couple of other companies. But I've actually been doing a bit of writing, so I've enjoyed that. And, you know, sharing some old stories and lessons I learned across the way. It's just been a nice little cathartic thing, I think, for me to sit down and relive some of those moments and share some of the lessons I learned from some pretty incredible people. So I guess, you know, small positives to come out of it.
Who would make the book? Who's going to be in your book then when you release it?
No, I've written a little bit about Gorgon, and Steve Nash has made it already, and my old mate Dustin Fletcher. So I'm working my way through them, but everyone, you know, the older you get, I suppose, and get a little bit more reflective, you realise how many people have impacted your career and your life, and you might become even more grateful, I suppose, the older you get and the further removed you are from them. But no, I've enjoyed it. It's been fun.
And your time in the States, I'm sure that's going to get a few chapters, because I don't want to, well, it's called The Last Dance, this first two episodes and this whole 10-part documentary series on the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls dynasty. It's an ironic tale, The Last Dance, because you got to the dance a little later than The Last Dance. You joined the Bulls year after.
I did, but it's funny that, and I'm going to write about it, but one of my everlasting memories, you know, the year of his last dance, 97-98, was my rookie year. And I was only ever going to have one chance to play against him. And we got to do that in March. I think it was March the 12th, 1998. And they turned up the town. And I'll tell you what, it was like the Beatles had turned up. The streets were lined trying to catch a glimpse of the team bus. The drive to training took forever, and I only lived a couple of miles away. And didn't play a minute in the first half, and I was really grumpy, but got to play a lot in the second half, and we found a way to force overtime. Cedric Ceballos hit a three on the buzzer. I actually had 4 points in overtime, and we beat the Bulls, so wow. I've never lost to Michael Jordan. and I'll hang my head on that, because he's not calling me for a rematch, but the thing was, it was just, he's just bigger than the sport. And I can't wait to watch this documentary because, again, experiencing what it was like when the Travelling Bulls came to town was incredible. There was just an aura about him and the group everywhere they went. And then to join the Chicago Bulls a year after when Jordan, Pip and Longley Rodman had all left and either moved on or retired was... It was just a completely different environment, but the history of the place, the recent history was still incredible because the staff still operated with the same systems, that the banners and the trophies still hung and sat at training. And the fans were the thing that I remember because we were really, really bad. And I think they understood how lucky and privileged they'd been to live in a town that had one of the greatest sporting teams across any code of all time, and they were willing to give us a chance and knew that they had to rebuild. So it was just this fantastic and slightly surreal experience, I think, to A, play against Michael Jordan and the Bulls, but B, to play for the club that he had played for and get to understand what made him tick a little bit and learn from the people who had been around him for years.
You've seen some auras, people carrying auras. Is that the biggest you've ever felt? Or did he have one?
No, by a mile. Hands down, daylight second. And it wasn't that he requested it or went out of his way. He was, he's a great athlete. He's a good-looking guy. But you see him on every billboard. He was the one who started making the videos and he promoted the big brands, so he was global in an era when global marketing was really taking off, or what I understand to be taking off. He was one of the guys that you saw everywhere, and he transcended the sport of basketball. And so when you came into his presence, there was an aura. And there was, don't get me wrong, there was security as well. But on a basketball court, it was different. You got used to playing guys like Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson and these guys, but Jordan was the one that you really got nervous and intimidated by to just be on the same court as him.
And how did he carry it when the cameras were off or when you weren't on the court? Did you get to see how he carried himself? Not enough.
No, you'd have to ask Luke Longley about that one. I've been fortunate to sit in some rooms when Longley's spoken about the Bulls, but he tells an incredible story, one of the best storytellers I've heard, and some of his experiences and stories he tells about not only Michael Jordan but that whole crew and what it took to win those the second lot of three championships is just, if you can find a way to speak to Luke or to hear some of his stories, it's incredible.
Yeah, and I've been lucky enough to run into Luke a few times and have chats to him on air as well, nowhere near as much as you because you know him so well, but he's kept a lot of those stories to himself or just to his close friends. He hasn't been one to throw those stories out there. I wonder whether he's going to put a lot of those down at some stage in TV form now that this has been regenerated.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's an interesting one, and I get where he's coming from because, he doesn't like television that much, and Luke, that is, and I suppose, like anything, like anyone, when you get asked the same question time and time and time again, you get sick of it. And I think he's happy just to have those memories and share them with people who are close to him, and takes it on, takes on pretty good faith that those stories won't probably get out unless he wants them to. But certainly they're entertaining. Certainly there's some great insight he can provide. And like you say, hopefully one day he will sit down for a long interview or write them down on paper because they're well worth reading.
Hey, do you mind, Chris, holding on if I go to a quick ad break and come back and talk to you a little bit about the NBL and what you think might be happening here domestically in the current NBA, if that's possible?
No problem.
You're with Dwayne's World. Great to have your company wherever you might be listening. We've got to play a little bit of What's Open in about 10 minutes' time. So if you want to jump on the line, let your world know that you are open. If you're a small business or a medium-sized business and you're okay, your business, get your workers up and running, then that will give you a chance in about 10 minutes' time. Chris Anstey's been good enough to stay on the line and answer a couple of questions, chat about where the NBL might be at. Adelaide 36ers looking for a coach and whether the NBL might have less or more imports coming here in October. What do you think will happen, Chris? Will Australia be such an attractive place to come to that some might want to come here and spend the 14 days in isolation, or do you think it's going to be the opposite, that we won't allow any internationals to come and we'll just have domestic players playing in the NBL early this season?
Yeah, I think it'll come down to what the government allows and whether or not it opens up the borders. If you ask the NBL, they'd love to continue to bring imports in. And, you know, we've actually just seen, and his name escapes me, the number one high school kid in the United States bypass the NBL on the advice that he might not be able to get in and go and play in the NBA G League. So, you know, already there are repercussions globally, just within our game. I know there are much bigger repercussions, of course. But the short answer is I really don't know. And there are rumours that the NBL may go ahead next year without imports, or perhaps imports who have stayed within Australia. But, look, I don't know. That's a little bit like everybody at the moment. We're building this aeroplane mid-flight and hoping it goes. And I think basketball is no different across all levels, you know, around the country.
And including the NBA as well, who have got a big question mark over what they do next, whether they go to hubs or whether they can play at all.
Yeah, there's clearly lots of conversation going on behind closed doors. And I think both leagues have done a pretty good job of keeping their cards pretty close to their chest, because they'd have numerous ideas and scenarios, but at the same time, we just don't know what we'll be allowed to do. Clearly, the NBA would love to be a playoff series and would love to crown a champion. We of course, all hope that happens, but we still don't know. And I suppose the luxury or the advantage that the NBL has is that we do have a few more months yet before we have to start looking at postponing or cancelling or amending the season. So hopefully, you know, more than just basketball, we get on top of this coronavirus and we can start getting back to what was a little bit more normal before this came about.
Can you see it advantaging or disadvantaging some teams? Because some teams will be in states in the US where they can train or might have a jump start training-wise on other teams, and some might stay in lockdown for longer than others.
Yeah, look, I think it'd be all the same. By the time the season rolls around in October or November, I think each team would start with a reasonably level playing field. I suppose the part that's impacted now is teams not knowing whether or not to pursue imports for next season, whether to sign local talent when free agency opens up. And I suppose if any team, or if any teams had a small advantage, they might be the ones with the deeper Australian talent already signed on their roster, because that's locked away and that's not going to change, and they know what their worst case scenario is. Again, I just don't know, and I think anyone who professes to, we're just guessing right now.
Yeah, and you're not guessing when it comes to Aussie kids going to US college. You've got first-hand experience of what that might look like in the next 12 months. What do you think it's going to look like for you and for all those Aussie kids out there that were thinking of going to US colleges or were already over there?
Yeah, reasonably close to home for me. In fact, in my home, because my daughter was due to fly on the 20th of June and head across to UCLA, and that's been postponed until at least September. So she won't do summer school, and she was due to do their international tour. They do one every 4 years, and it happened to coincide with Izzy's freshman year, which we'll hope will be this year. So, that's been pushed back at least 3 months. I'm not sure if that'll be pushed back further. And I believe they've already started cancelling some third and fourth tier sports across college campuses. So, again, I'd be guessing, but it keeps getting pushed back further and further. And, you know, the only advice I've given her and I've given to any other young basketball player is to find a way to continue to work, because I think, especially with the young kids, that there are going to be a lot out there who use this period of time as an excuse to have not worked hard enough or to fall behind a little bit. Then there'll be others who really distance themselves from those who didn't work because they are out running or they're skipping or they're working on their ball handling or they're doing something. They're staying as ready as they possibly can. I think there'll be a really noticeable difference between players that have worked and those who haven't when sport takes off again across all sports.
So you think some might take it to the extreme end then, Chris, and upskill actually at this stage, get more ball handling than they maybe necessarily would if they had to go to school or had a day job they had to go to?
Yeah, maybe not upskill, but probably work on some of the things that they don't quite have the time to do in an ordinary training environment when school and or work, for lack of a better term, gets in the way. So they do have time to invest in themselves, the time to get stronger and maybe quicker and all these sorts of things. Of course, what they can't work on is the application of whatever skills they improve, and that's going to take time when they come back. But I just think it'll be really, really noticeable when athletes do come back, whether they're young or if they've been professionals for 10 years, as to those who put in the work.
You interested in coaching the 36ers at all, Chris?
No, that's Connor Henry's job. I think we'll find Connor Henry finds. The NBL's known him. He's been over in the NBA G League and around the periphery of some NBA teams for a while. And I think you'll find Connor Henry will be the next head coach of the Adelaide 36ers.
And a good job to have, do you think, even though they've almost done they're going to do a scrabble with their roster. They're throwing all their tiles in and getting pretty much a whole new set.
No, yeah, I think any head coaching role is a good job to have, especially in the NBL or WNBL. You're working with the best players in the country and some of the best staff. So, yeah, good luck to him, and I hope he does very well. But it's a very competitive league. And, of course, the other question is now we wonder if Tasmania will be delayed entering the league by a year and a bunch of different things to happen in there as well, I suppose. So, no, it's an interesting situation to walk into. We'll see how he handles it.
And private ownership, do you ever see the AFL dipping their toe back in that water? They did years ago with Ruben Pellerman and the Brisbane Bears. They did with Christopher Skase back in the Sydney Swans days. Is that a way of making a team like the Gold Coast Suns, for example, financially competitive?
It could be. There are much smarter people than me out there who would know the implications better, but certainly it's been proven to work in basketball leagues around the world. Oftentimes there are greater funds available when you're talking about the calibre of people or the calibre of their bank accounts, more like it, that would buy these teams and own the stadiums. And I suppose you'd be talking, you can see what Larry Kestelman's done to the NBL. You can imagine 20-odd Larry Kestelman floating around and really investing into the AFL. But perhaps it could work. At the same time, the other thing the NBL's experienced is a situation like Eddie Groves, where he owned the Brisbane Bullets, and when his own individual or personal assets went bankrupt, so did the Brisbane Bullets, and they disappeared from the league. So I suppose that's a risk that the AFL may not be willing to take. But again, I think nothing's off the table in these times, because the first thing sporting clubs need to do right now is survive.
So there are teams in the US that have had a big owner like a Mark Cuban come in, buy them and make them more competitive because they plough the money in that's been required, even if they're a smaller market franchise that hasn't been fed that kind of hands-on treatment before?
Absolutely. Mark Cuban is the one that jumps to mind. And when I was at the Mavericks, Ross Perot Jr. owned the team, and Mark Cuban came in either the year after or 2 years after I left. And, the investment he put into looking after his players, making it a more attractive destination for free agents, and eventually investing in and buying a brand new stadium that was comparable to the best in the world, was all of a sudden Dallas went from an easy beat and a team that was perennially down the bottom of the ladder to a championship contender, and they actually won one NBA title through that period. So he's done an outstanding job, and that is definitely a time where private ownership has absolutely helped.
Great to have a chat there, Chris. I always love picking your brain. You're such a wise guy to tap into. So thanks, especially on behalf of all of our basketball fans out there. You're doing anything around the house? Have you been watching shows like House Rules or anything? What have you been doing?
No, I haven't been watching them. But, hey, my cooking's improving. My teaching skills are improving. My house has never been cleaner. I'm getting good at all those things I probably should have been good at 2 decades ago.
Yep, mine's never been messier, unfortunately. Great, because I'm home all the time. I'm the worst bloke to have in this house. Yes. Great to have a chat to you, Chris. We'll talk soon.
Good on you, Blaino. See you, mate.
Chris Anstey, former NBA and NBL star, talking about that Chicago Bulls documentary, which is out 6 p.m. this coming Monday on Netflix. Take some more of your calls. In fact, Varney, you've been holding for a while. You want to talk about Sam Newman. Welcome to you, Varney.
Yeah, g'day, Dwayne. It's been a long wait, but anyway. Look, I just want to say that I think that Sam Newman speaks a lot of common sense, and I agree with everything he actually said. And also, as far as the two blokes you'd like to throw the ball to when you're in strife,
yep.
Inside 50, I'd go for the two Darrens, mate. Darren Buick inside 50, hardly ever missed, and outside 50, I never marvelled at this bloke kicking goals from 60, 65 metres out, Darren Bennett from Melbourne, when he was playing.
Oh, yeah,
he'd done all his other stuff.
He could launch a long ball. Love your fact that you've held on for so long, Varney. I appreciate you joining us. Over to your calls now for What's Open. 1-300-736-736 is the number. Let the world know that your small business, your medium business is up and running. You can send me through a few speckled texts as well, and I can read out your business name. Great to be able to give you a pump up. It's great for me to be able to pump up our regular sponsors on this show, like Werribee Kia, like Robot Building Suppliers, who are open for business, like Maccas, who are also recognising those in the healthcare industry that are working tirelessly to look after each of us and our loved ones at the moment. So to say thanks, Maccas, shouting any healthcare workers a free small McCafe hot drink or medium soft drink until the 17th of May. It's great for me to be able to plug those businesses like Maccas and like Werribee Kia, but let's give your off-the-beaten-track business. If you're in the burbs and you're doing something and you're trying to get it out there, let's let the world know. 1-300-736-736 is the number. And I'll read out a few of your speckled texts as well about who you'd put the ball in the hands of to kick for your life from outside 50 and on the run as well from a pocket. Aaron Edwards from the Roos, the straightest kick I've ever seen, like an arrow. Thanks for your text. Nick Davis was a reliable kick from Zach. Absolutely he was. Jason Heatley, originally from Reservoir Footy Club, had a beautiful set shot routine. In 1997, he kicked 10 straight for St Kilda against North Melbourne at Waverley, and then 7 straight in a prelim final against North Melbourne. From J-Man, pretty simple. I'd bet my life on Fev to kick a goal from outside 50. One of the purest shots of at goal ever. Thanks a lot for yours, J-Man. And take more of your calls and your text after the break. You at Dwayne's World.